Now we're going to welcome us to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmuck, Lance Meadow with you, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you prefer to hit us up there. Talk some Giants football for the next 1 hour. I know we're going to have no shortage of topics, no shortage of calls. The rumor kind of flew around yesterday a little bit, and the Giants made it official today. I will read the Will Beatty update for you. Giants left tackle William Beatty underwent successful surgery to repair a torn pectoral muscle last evening at Hospital for Special Surgery in Manhattan. Beatty suffered the injury during weight training on Tuesday. His expected recovery time is 5 to 6 months. You do the simple math, that would put it sometime in the beginning slash middle of November-ish type of area. Beatty, the Giants' second-round draft choice in 2009, is entering his seventh season with the team. He has played in 82 regular season games with 63 starts, one start as an extra lineman, tight end, eligible receiver in 2012, 42 at left tackle. He played every game last year, but he did suffer some injuries before that, including a back injury. He had the eye injury that he went through, and a knee a couple years ago as well. So Will Beatty will miss a significant amount of time this year. My guess is that they'll put him on the PUP list. Then they'll figure out after that six-week/eight-week period after the guys have to come off the PUP list, Lance. But now the Giants are going to have to figure out what they're going to do at left tackle, and it's going to be a challenge.
Well, there's a few options right off the top, and once again, this is pure speculation, nothing official, because we haven't even had OTAs or training camp, but they could do a variety of a few things, John. They can move Justin Pugh over to left tackle. Pugh played left tackle at Syracuse in college. There's familiarity there, moving him from the right side to the left side. They could slide in their first-round pick, Eric Flowers, who also played left tackle at Miami. He has experience as a tackle on both sides, just as Justin Pugh. The third option is you turn to the veteran in Marshall Newhouse, who you brought in via free agency, who also has played both on the right side and the left side with the Bengals and the Green Bay Packers. And in college, he was the left tackle at TCU. He protected Andy Dalton's blind side. So there are options internally, and they have a number of experienced players who have at least been on either the right or the left side with respect to the tackle spot. The other route is you either bring in another free agent for the sake of competition, or you look to perhaps convert a guard to a tackle. But I think Pugh, Flowers, and Newhouse, you have a few options that you could easily turn to.
I imagine those have to be your three options, Lance. I don't see what other direction you could possibly look at. I mean, Newhouse has done it before. If you want to go by the Pro Football Focus stats, he has had some issues playing outside of tackle the last few years, but the Giants obviously liked what they saw. They like his raw tools. That's why they did bring him in. So he'll be in the mix. The question now with it to me is Pugh and Flowers, because I think ideally you'd like to have Newhouse be that swing guy where you kind of – that's why you brought him in.
Yeah.
And last year the Giants made the determination that their best offensive line combination was to have John Jerry at one of the guards and Pugh outside. So I would imagine that would once again eventually be their thinking. Again, this is all speculation. I want to mimic what Glenn said. We're just kind of talking about what the scenarios could possibly be. And if you take a look at it, if you believe last year Pugh slash Jerry were your two best guys there, unless you believe, and maybe the Giants do believe this, I don't know, that Marshall Newhouse is a upgrade over Jerry, which means Newhouse is a better tackle then Jerry is a guard, then you can think about moving Pugh inside still and sticking Flowers over at left tackle. But then you get to the question, do you want to put that on a rookie to protect Eli Manning's blind side?
Yeah.
I mean, we talked earlier in the year, even when we were speculating that Flowers could be the right tackle, that he was going to have growing pains. He was going to have issues. You look at the story I have up on Giants.com today. David Deal, Sean O'Hara, Chris Knee, they all talked about how Flowers has some technique things he has to work on. Well, if you put him out on that island at left tackle, and I understand there are ways to help him, whether it's chipping with the tight end, leaving a running back over there, there are ways to help him out. I get that. But eventually, when you're a left tackle in this league, at some point on a third down, you're going to have to go one-on-one with the opposing team's best pass rusher, and guess what? You're going to have to stop him. Now, the Giants will give Eric Flowers a chance to prove he can do that in the preseason, in training camp, in the OTAs, which start next week, and maybe he can do it. But very rarely do you see a first-round pick offensive lineman. And I'm going back to first overall picks a couple years ago. We talked about Luke Jokel and Eric Fisher and those guys. And you got Greg Robinson last year, guys like that, Jake Matthews Jr. last year. None of those guys were asked year one to go in there and play left tackle. So I think it's a big challenge. I think people inside the Giants organization think he has the physical capability of doing it. Those three offensive linemen I just mentioned in the story all believe he can be a franchise left tackle. So the question now is, how fast can Eric Flowers become that franchise left tackle? How quickly can he get there? And it's going to be real interesting to watch him now in the OTAs and training camp to see if he can do it. But I think ideally, Lance, that's the best case scenario. If you could just slide Flowers out there to left tackle, and then you don't have to move everybody else around to a million different spots. I think that's the best case scenario here. The question is, can the rookie do it? And we're going to find out.
Well, now there's an urgency to expose him to different sides of the offensive line. Regardless of, like you said, it's easiest to put him in left side, but I think there's more of an emphasis now to get him experience on the left, get him experience on the right, look at different formations and see who the best five are in their respective spots, and also try to develop that continuity. As you hit on it, you know, they did bring in Newhouse here, I think, to be that swing tackle, such as a Sean Lockley or a David Deal in the past, who you can have and put him in on the right and the left side. Do you want to now put him on one specific side and remove him from being that swing type of guy? Obviously, you didn't bank on an injury happening, so sometimes you have to be creative, and that changes up things. I want to piggyback off of the one point that you mentioned with respect to young guys being rare for them to come in at left tackle. Jake Matthews actually did get experience at left tackle last year, but remember, they started him off at right tackle.
That wasn't the plan. He
Correct.
Had to go there because of an injury.
Exactly.
Very similar now what's happening with the Giants.
And it could exactly mimic what's happening here with the Giants.
Absolutely.
Because Sam Baker, and we talked about this earlier in the week, John, Sam Baker, he was the starting left tackle. He goes down late in the preseason. Jake Matthews was penciled in as the starting right tackle. All of a sudden, they're down the guy who's supposed to protect Matt Ryan's blind side, and now they have to swing him from the right side to the left side. So the plan is, for most teams, even if they draft a top-notch left tackle coming out of college, we're going to get him comfortable. We're going to start him off on the right side, and then we'll progressively move him to the left side. Now, similar to what the Falcons had to do with Jake Matthews, for Eric Flowers, it could very well be baptism by fire, as we were just discussing, John, where you have no choice, but you have to get him experience early on at that left side. And I think that's a lot to ask for a rookie, to go in year one and protect Eli Manning's blind side. That doesn't mean he's not capable of doing it. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have the versatility to do it. It's just, from a mindset, it is a lot to throw on a rookie day one. And I don't think that the Giants envisioned day one, week one against the Cowboys, we're all of a sudden going to throw our first round pick into the fire like that.
And I've heard people make this argument to me already that, well, if you believe that at some point Eric Flowers is going to be your franchise left tackle, and I think the Giants do believe that at some point he can be their franchise left tackle, why not just put him in now and let him get used to it early, let him get training at it early? Why make him switch positions? If there's an opening, just put him in there and let him go. Well, here's my argument against it. I'm not saying the Giants won't eventually do this if he proves he can do it now, but this is the argument against it. I'm going to quote Len here. What's the Giants' biggest asset?
Well, he said a lot of things, so I don't know which quote we're going
at. Eli Manning.
Okay.
What do you have to do?
You have to protect your quarterback.
You have to protect your biggest asset. And what's the most important position on the offensive line to protect a right-handed quarterback?
Left tackle.
It's left tackle. So if Flowers shows that he's ready, great. Put him out there. That, to me, is the best-case scenario here. But if he shows that, look, there's going to be a little learning curve here, maybe I'm not ready to jump in right away and be a dominant left tackle, which, again, is not a criticism or a knock on Flowers. It doesn't happen that guys roll in on our great left tackles right away. I don't care where they're picked. All right? Even Tyron Smith, his rookie year with the Cowboys, he had issues right away at playing out there at tackle, left tackle. And he, by the way, turned into an all-pro offensive lineman. That doesn't mean he's not going to be good if he's not ready to do it in year number one. So here are your options. Do you look at the veteran Newhouse, see what he can do? Though there is a track record here that you can go on. Newhouse is more of a known quantity here. You know what he can do at left tackle because you've seen him do it in
the NFL
before.
There's a big enough sample size for him.
Absolutely. So, what's your other choice? And you got Justin Pugh. You brought him up earlier. And I think that's the dark horse here because Justin Pugh has adjusted to the NFL. Now, has he had some ups and downs? He certainly has. Justin spoke about that himself last season and at the end of the season when we had him on Giants.com. But he played left tackle in college. He knows the footwork. He's comfortable there. He knows the offense. He knows what it's like to take on NFL defensive linemen. We know he's capable. I think him moving out to left tackle might end up being the answer, and then you have Flowers over there on the right side. I think there's a decent chance that could be the end game here. I think the Giants will look at that. But the question then remains, Lance, if the plan was to move Pugh inside, then you have to readjust that if you move Pugh out to left tackle, and that causes more moving parts. Can John Jerry play left guard, or does he have to play right guard? If he has to play right guard like he did last year,
then
you have to put Schwartz at left guard. Oh, but Schwartz is more comfortable at right guard. And it screws everything up.
Of course. And you don't want to be in this position, as we talk about, with the game of musical chairs.
Right.
But, John, I think now that Beattie's hurt, what is priority number one? Is it 2015? Or is it worried about how you're going to align things for 2016 and beyond?
I think you have to worry about this year.
So
you have a
go.
Team, you're trying to win games.
So if that's the philosophy, then to me, you're not worried about long-term, it was perhaps to move Pugh inside. Let me get the five best offensive linemen on the field.
I agree.
Let me keep Eli Manning upright.
That's
Let
fair.
Me make sure that the offense continues where it left off last season. And let's make this a very productive year. That's what has to be the mindset for the team, as opposed
I agree with
to
that.
Worrying about, well, you know, we were going to move Pugh inside. We're going to move Schwartz to this side. Eric Flowers was going to start off as a right tackle versus a left tackle. Just get the best five who can play continuous throughout the season, because that's important, continuity. One last thing I want to throw out before we get to the phone calls and continue to talk about this. I threw this out on Twitter, and I like to go back to the archives sometimes just to make a point. And we've brought this up time and time again, John, with respect to the history of the offensive line. Don't overlook what the group of Sean O'Hara, David Deal, Kareem McKenzie, Soibert, and all those other guys put together. They put together a string of 38 consecutive games, regular season, on the field at once. And when you look at what the Giants have had to deal with in terms of injuries on the offensive line in each of the last 3 years, I think that it brings the appreciation of that group to the forefront even more. Because what that group was able to accomplish in terms of durability, forget numbers, forget pass protection, forget running, durability, you'd be hard-pressed to find a group that could stay on the field at once like that in this present culture of the NFL, where guys go down left and right. So I think that that puts that group a little bit more in perspective, given what the Giants are dealing with currently with respect to beating.
And I want to just add on that before we get to your calls. And I asked David Deal about that and their core unit. And this was his quote. And this lends to how things in the offensive line don't click right away. And I'm going to read his quote. When we had, this is David Deal now. When we had our success, it was when our core unit was together and we had experience for a long period of time. Playing offensive line is not just a plug and play. It doesn't work that way. There's an accountability to it. There's a trust to it. And you have to know that the guy next to you is going to fight until the last whistle blows just like you are. And we had that trust and accountability in one another. And every game they counted on me just like I counted on them, because you knew how important it was to the football team. You don't get that in practice. It can start to form in practice, but you get that under fire in a game. That's when that type of chemistry forms. So, like both of us have said today, you want to try to set up a unit here that's going to be a unit. Now, when Will Beattie gets healthy and maybe he can come off IR or the PUP list or the temp IR, whatever they, however they handle it, whenever he comes off that in November, you want to be able to slide him in and keep that continuity. But if things are going well, then maybe you don't have to.
He becomes an insurance policy.
Absolutely right.
Well.
And you don't have to rush him back if things are going well. So Beattie could theoretically be here for the last eight or so games of the year. If everything goes right with the rehab, that'd be great. But you'd like to try to get a unit together that you can stick with now through camp, through the early part of the season, to build some of that chemistry, build that continuity. Because last, we saw it last year. The offensive line, once they got to week 12 or 13, significantly improved.
Well, they had games under their belt.
Because the group played together. Absolutely right. So try to get that going. And I know it's luck and you can't do anything. You can't have another injury to move pieces around. You got to start getting guys where they're going to play and build from there.
If there's any positive, it's timing, John.
But better now
better,
than August
exactly.
25th.
So you at least now have, not only do you have training camp, John, you have OTAs.
Yep.
Remember, Schwartz gets hurt last year in the preseason. So you were working offensive linemen in different spots, but it was like, wow, out of nowhere. Now all of a sudden we're getting ready for the regular season. We got to think about who we're putting where. Now you have progressive time. You don't have to rush Flowers along. You can do it little by little. You can move Pugh back to left tackle, see where his comfort zone is. I think there's time and there's options, which is a positive wrinkle to what is obviously bad news that the Giants never anticipated happening.
All right, let's get to the calls. I'm sure you guys have a lot to say. We'll take your calls. Maybe we'll go past one if the phone calls keep rolling in as well. 201-939-4513. We should also point out there's no Big Blue Kickoff Live tomorrow. The office is closed for a long weekend for Memorial Day, so no show Friday. No show on Monday. I believe you and Anita are back next Tuesday.
Correct.
And then the week rolls on as OTAs start up on Wednesday. So 201-939-4513. Let's kick it off on the phones. I don't even know who's been holding the longest. I'm going to take a guess. Let's say it's Chris down in Houston. Chris, what's going on?
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, Chris. How are you, pal?
Very good. Very good. You know, I'll say this. You're not the only source that I have for Giants, but you are the source that I have for Giants down here, and I appreciate everything you guys do.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you listening and being part of the show.
Okay, just a couple things. One with the it's kind of ironic. I listen every day. I just don't have the opportunity to call. But I think it was Kashawn yesterday was talking about firing the strength and conditioning coach, and then shortly after that, and Lance and Paul made good points why it wasn't their fault with regards to soft tissue injuries. And then you hear about this with Beatty just a few hours later, which is disappointing. And I'm not calling for their heads, but what I am thinking is I wish we would have taken Collins in the seventh round before he would have went to a free agent situation. I thought that would have been the smart play. There was one other thing that I wanted to say, and I want to get your comments as well.
Sure.
The key Giants for me that you've been talking about all week for this upcoming year, offensively, I think hands down it's Reuben Randle. I think it's really foolish for us to expect Cruz to be anywhere near where he was in the past. I think just being productive would be a great thing. So I think Randle, after all these years and now having a second year under McAdoo's offense and you know, the two previous years with Gilbride's offense, he's critical. He has to step up. Defensively, I haven't heard anybody say this, and this was a person that was on the top of my mind since you first spoke about, you know, who would you select or who would you say. But I think DRC. DRC is somebody that's on my mind because I thought he had a quiet first year with the Giants. He was hurt. This is his third NFL team. Fourth NFL team. I want to see more out of him on the defensive side, and I think he's going to be out there. Isolated even more with the type of pass rush that SPAC is going to bring. So I just want to get your comments on those.
No, Chris, I think those are logical guys, to be honest with you. I think Randle, especially, again, like you said, with Cruz's injury, if he can play like he did the last two games of last year, the Giants will be in great, great shape. And I mentioned the corners on defense because, quite frankly, after those first two guys, I think there's a fairly significant drop-off in, you know, in past production. Now, maybe those young guys can step up and be really good, but we don't know that yet. So I think Dominic Rogers-Cromartie and Prince, both those guys, are going to have to be pretty good one-on-one, bump-and-run corners to fit in the Spags defense. I think he's right on the money.
And, Chris, the fact that you reference not just DRC's injuries, Prince was also hurt, too, and missed the majority of the season. So it would be nice to see both of them fully healthy, both of them being able to be utilized on an island and seeing how this secondary comes to fruition. Because, remember, with young safeties potentially, I think that does put a little additional pressure on the corners this coming season
right. In
terms of Spags saying, guys, I want you to handle your own on the outside, the exterior, so this way the safeties can help each other out within the inside.
Well, and here's the thing, too. I know you brought up the strength and conditioning coaches, and I'll try to cut this off at the pass before somebody else calls up about it. Guys lift weights every day. Guys lift weights when they're not here. Guys lift weights when they're on their own working out. I mean,
freak injury.
I mean, I don't know what he was doing, but it's a pec injury. I'm guessing he was probably bench pressing and the muscle tears. What can you do? I mean, I don't see how a coach can anticipate and be like, no, you stop benching. Your next one's going to tear your pec. I mean, I don't think there's anything you can do about it.
Yeah, and I wasn't calling for his head
either.
It was just ironic. Lance, when you bring up Prince, you bring up a great point, but I think you would agree the past year and a half before that injury, I was left encouraged with the improvement that he's made.
Absolutely.
And I really think in a contract year now, I really expect some good things out of him.
I'd agree with you 100%, Chris. The only reason I threw out Prince is, you know, when you have both corners banged up, it's hard to really see what the two of them are capable of doing at the same time on the field together, whereas this season, hopefully, they are 100%, and then you can really see how this secondary can spread its wings.
Thank you, Chris.
Appreciate the
thanks,
call,
guys.
Chris. You got it. Call, thanks so much. One other thing that obviously we should address, because I'm sure we're going to get a lot of phone calls, and Chris did bring it up, is Lyle Collins. And I know a lot of people in the wake of the Beattie injury are going to bring up. But you know, here's the thing. Collins, remember, let's say hypothetically you brought him in, John. He's a rookie. So right. How does that necessarily put you in any better position in sliding in for Will Beattie than what you have with potentially Eric Flowers or a more established veteran? See, if there was a more established veteran out there, I think that's more of a stronger argument. Okay, then you have somebody who's very comfortable going right into there. Right. Collins is going to have to go through the growing pains of any other rookie that you would have had currently on the roster or hypothetically that you would have brought in.
Hey, look, and I think you're operating on 2020 hindsight here too, because you say, oh, well, you know, you should have picked Collins. That's great. But three things. One, you would not have been able to get him as an undrafted free agent because, first, he said he wanted to play close to home, which is Louisiana. That's not New York. I don't know how everybody is on their geography, but they're far away. And number two, he wanted to play in a warm weather city. Well, not sure if you have a thermometer, but doesn't stay real warm up here in an outdoor stadium in November and December. So those two things really don't mesh with what Collins was looking for as a free agent. So then you have Chris's option where you say, well, you know, we should have drafted in the seventh round. But remember, at that time, Lance, what had his agent said? If you pick our client on day three of the draft, he's not going to play for you. He's going to go back into the draft and go again in 2016, I guess it would be. So every NFL team heard the agents, and they said, you know what, we're not going to pick the guy. Nobody else did, and he became a free agent, and he had a chance to pick his own team. And, you know, I don't know what Jerry Reese's interest was in the kid. Maybe he went after him hard. I have no idea. But the bottom line is that it was Lyle Collins' choice. The Giants can't strong-arm a kid into signing if he doesn't want to. That's not how it works. So those are things you have to consider when you take a look at that situation with Collins specifically.
And whenever it comes to injuries, I say this time and time again, look at your internal options first before you play the coulda, woulda, shoulda game. And with Flowers, Pugh, and Newhouse internally here, I think they have more than enough options to fill that void at left tackle. If they didn't have the type of depth, perhaps it's a different conversation right now. But those are three options. You have a veteran, you have an up-and-coming rookie that you just brought in, and you have Justin Pugh, who has experience on the left and the right side. I think one of those three could certainly step up between OTAs, training camp, and the start of the regular season to help solidify your offensive line.
And I'm sure someone will bring this up, so I will try to cut this off at the pass as well very quickly. In terms of free agents out there, that guys are available at offensive tackle, it's a very, 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 very slim group. The guy whose name most people probably know is Anthony Collins, former offensive tackle for the Bengals, played 1 year for the Bucks last year, got cut. He's still a free agent. He's a guy that has a lot of experience. His performance is what more than likely yielded his cutting in Tampa, and the Bengals eventually letting him walk away too. So if you're looking for a veteran tackle, that's probably your best choice in free agency. But as Lance said, they have two young guys, a third-year player in Pugh, a rookie in Flowers that have both played left tackle before in college, and they already signed the veteran in Newhouse. So I think they'll look at their internal options first, but obviously they will keep their eyes open on the waiver wire come June 1st. Any, you know, post-June 1st cuts, those aren't as common as now as they used to be. I get that. But they'll see if anybody in the free agent market could come in and maybe add to the depth a little bit at offensive tackle.
The other player that's been thrown out on Twitter and obviously through the news cycle is Jake Long, formerly of the Dolphins, who's dealt with a number of different injuries,
is
including a torn
yet,
ACL. Well, that's the million-dollar question, and that's probably a big reason why he's still on the market, the fact that he may not be at 100%. Once again, that's pure speculation. Perhaps he's somebody, as you get closer to camp, gets back to full form, is in an option. But, you know, remember, the goal is now during OTAs to start develop that chemistry. So even, John, if you bring in somebody during camp, that person has to learn the playbook. And why would you want to disrupt the chemistry? So I think the goal right now, once again, internal options, working out what you have in-house, and then perhaps you explore down the road.
No, considering the numbers, you just lost one. I wouldn't be surprised if they added somebody just to fill out that roster spot. Because you want X number of players
in terms of battle and competition.
And things like that.
Or you just give somebody else who was low on the depth chart now an opportunity to rise up and make a statement of some sort.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. Sam in Middleton. I'm guessing this is Middleton, New Jersey, is up next. What's going on, Sam?
Sam, are you there? Sam going once?
Sam going twice? And Sam souls. Sam, you still there? And we lost him. Sam, call us right back. We'll put you right back on. Sorry about that, bud. Let's go to Abdul in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's up?
Hey, guys. I couldn't believe when I saw this on Twitter about BD yesterday. I feel like we gave him the Maloik. The evil liars have been talking about him. I felt so guilty. That being said, I think the most important thing is to build continuity, as you guys said. We're assuming that, once again, Flowers might start at right tackle. Let's keep, the right side of the line, Flowers, Schwartz, have Richburger guard, and the best guard option that right, maybe Mosley, because he was doing well until he got hurt, and or Jerry. And let's put Pew at left tackle. You guys have said how he's worked and getting stronger this offseason. He has great footwork. I think, probably the best footwork of anyone on the offensive line. Let's see what he could do and keep him at left tackle.
Abdul, it's funny you said that. I just want to echo this, and this is why I brought up Pew before. I agree with you. I think of all the guys on the offensive line right now, Pew probably does have the best feet. So on that, I agree with you.
And also, I was looking at our schedule. The timing couldn't be worse. We play like four division games, the first eight games. But the thing is, we're not playing anyone with an intense pass rush, which could be good.
Abdul, they play the Bills in week four. They might have one of the best pass rushes in all of football.
You know what? I don't think about the Bills. You're right. Sorry.
You know what, though? On the other teams, you're right. The Cowboys with no Greg Hardy. We'll see what Randy Gregory can do for them, but not a great
pass rush. Though.
Falcons, mediocre. Redskins of Kerrigan, but he's going to be lined up over the Giants' right tackle, not the left tackle. I would worry about the Bills. I'd worry about the 49ers. And as Lance said, the Eagles have shown flashes of rushing the passer.
They were up there in
the last year.
Last
so
yeah.
Those are the three teams I would worry about in your top seven games.
All right. So as I said, I think the most important thing, and if you want to go free agent, maybe look at a guard instead of a tackle, to round out the roster. Because I think we, as you said, I think Newhouse, we have a somewhat, even though he's cut a lot, but, he's a veteran tackle, Pew, right there. I think if we want some depth at free agency, let's go out and get a guard. But also, I think this might affect us keeping an extra receiver or a linebacker because, we might want a little more bodies on the offensive line. So that also might affect, the roster with his injury, which also could affect, the way we play defense or offense. Well, anyway, as you said, this is probably the one injury that we couldn't afford, but now we have it, and let's see what we do about it. But I think it's most important from day one, starting next week, let's get the guys who we think are going to start and try to build as much continuity from the first OTA onwards.
Thanks, Abdul.
All right, Abdul. Appreciate
all right, guys,
the phone call. In terms of the numbers game, I don't know how much this is really going to impact the numbers game because if they put him on PUP, he's not a part of the 53. He's not necessarily impacting that. Also, when you finalize the roster.
Well, no, it wouldn't affect your final 53 when you're cutting down after that fourth preseason game, but theoretically now you want to add a guy to your 90-man.
I understand that now, but I guess I'm looking, and I think Abdul was looking more down the road when you start to finalize who's on your 53.
I'm not sure how it works. Because I don't think you could put a guy on the PUP list until you get to training camp. So that roster spot might not get opened up until July 30th or 31st. So I think he actually still counts towards the 90 now, even though he's hurt.
I would agree with that.
I think that's the case. I'm not sure if you can designate a guy as hurt this early and pick somebody up to replace him. I don't think that's how it works. I could be wrong, though. I'm not positive about that.
PUP list rules, but I believe that sounds about right, where you don't necessarily add somebody onto the list until you get around training.
Well, you certainly can't put somebody on the PUP list yet, but I'm not sure if there's another, function in the CBA where you can put a guy in some other type of injured list to free up a spot this early in the season. I don't think there is that.
Well, because once you put a guy on PUP, it becomes then PUP reserve, but that's after you put him on PUP, so it's way too early to even put somebody on PUP reserve at this point. I think that transaction would have to wait to take part until the preseason.
I agree. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Christian in New York. He's been holding the longest. Christian?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up, bud?
Hey, I'm going to need some help with this here. I just got a Landon Collins jersey, but I want to know if you guys might know if he's really trying to change the number 26 soon as possible.
Christian, you should listen to our advice. What do I always tell you about getting a rookie's jersey?
I know.
You jumped the gun on me,
man. He's going to be awesome.
Now, look. I think Landon Collins is going to be here for a long time, being a great player, but young guys and rookies have the tendency to bounce numbers around a little bit before they settle on where they want to go. Orleans Darkwa is 26th on offense. I imagine if Collins was going to get 26, he would have gotten it already. I can't imagine it's going to change now. If Darkwa doesn't make the squad, might have changed then, maybe. I also think they hesitate to give out a established star's number on the same side of the ball as soon as he leaves. So Roll was here and was a great safety for a long time. I'm not sure they like to give somebody 26 the year after he leaves, like at the same position, out of a sign of respect. So I think you might be safe for a year. You might not be. Or you might have wasted a lot of money, or you might have a great jersey. I have no good answer for you, Christian. So, sorry.
Went all across the board on that answer, I'll tell you that.
I thought maybe you might have talked to him about it or heard him talking about it, but
Well, John has a lot of powwows with these players, Christian. So, you know, not all the info that he talks to the players with, he can actually reveal on this program. So I don't know how much you're going to get out, but I can guarantee you we will do all we can to make sure that John Schmelk passes the message.
Well, I can tell you this. I talked about 34 or 35 different guys in the locker room last week. I asked them all one question. What's your opinion of Lance Meadow? And it was about 98% negative.
Well, at least they're all on the same page. That's the positive.
Chemistry.
Yes.
That's how you build team chemistry.
That's a good sign of Lance Meadow
will unite this team
exactly.
Heading through the OTAs.
There we go. That should be
Absolutely.
The main cause this offseason. Correct.
I also wanted to mention quick that I've heard some reports about a sophomore slump for Odell Beckham. But the thing I want to focus on there is what he was able to do without much chemistry with Eli. And in his standards, he didn't even feel like he was in shape when he was having good games.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, to say he didn't have any chemistry with Eli, I'm not sure if that's accurate. I think they formed...
Oh, not much. Not much chemistry.
Well,
I mean,
here's the thing. I mean, think if you look at it logically, they didn't play together a lot. You wouldn't think they had chemistry. I just think they freakishly formed a great chemistry right away, and it happened pretty quickly.
And it got better and better as the season progressed.
Yeah. Yeah, it got much better as it went on, and you could just tell that he was starting to really get in a groove with him. So I think that'll just build even more. And, I mean, I think he'll even be a little bit faster than what we saw at first last year. So I really think the sky's the limit for the guy.
Well, absolutely. I mean, everyone knows it is. And, Christian, thanks a lot for the call, bud. I'm going to do a little quick math.
Appreciate the phone call.
And I don't think anybody's talking about a sophomore slump for Beckham necessarily. If you take out his first three games last year, in which he gained, let's see, 78, 86, 106 yards. So that means you take that off at the top, which is 1305. He had 1,199 receiving yards in his final 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 games. All right? So do quick division there. You're looking at about 119 yards per game over his last 10 games. I don't think I'm going out on a limb here. But I'm going to take a guess. I don't think he's going to average 120 yards per game this year.
I think that'd be difficult, especially with Victor Cruz coming back. There's going to be more options.
I mean, I'll do the quick math right here. 120 yards per game over 16 games. That's 480, 1,600. That would be 1,920 receiving yards. I think asking as good as Odell Beckham Jr. is, and yes, I did that math in my head, by the way. I expect some praise for that.
I mean, that's just
to get to 1,900 and 20 receiving yards, I think, is asking a lot. And I have the utmost respect for Odell Beckham's skills. Getting close to 2,000 yards receiving. So he might not have what I would call a sophomore slump this year. I think that's a little strong. Do I think he's going to average 120 yards receiving every game like he did the final 10 last year? Probably not. That's all I'm saying.
And I would agree with you. I wouldn't categorize that as a slump. I would just say you have to put expectations in check. What he did last season was unbelievable, so to expect him to duplicate that with now defenses getting a better feel for him, more options coming back onto the field for the Giants, I think you can expect him to be an integral part of the offense, but for people who are invested in fantasy, maybe you need to realize that he can't be expected to duplicate exactly what he did last season. Another thing I wanted to clarify, there is a preseason pup list and a regular season pup list. There is no pup list that I am aware of based on what I have looked at online for the offseason. So the earliest you can put somebody on the pup list is once you get to that training camp area.
I'm not sure if there's like a reserved injured list. Not a pup reserve list, but a
so you're
reserved
talking about an
injured
entirely
list
new...
where you can free up a roster spot. I don't know. There might be. But I don't think there is. I think if you get put on that reserved injured list, that means you can't play the rest of the season. So I don't think they can add somebody right away. But I will find out about that after the show. I should have asked before. I didn't think about it. But I'll see if they can add somebody to replace him based on the injury. 201-939-4513. Leonard Maryland is up next. Leonard?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Len. I already quoted you once the show. You couldn't resist calling in to add
you
to
know,
it, huh?
I caught it, and part of the discussion was I'm going to remind Lance of one of my favorite ones as well as we move through this. But, you know, I thought we put that young offensive tackle, Propog, on the PUP list already. What did we do with him? I don't want that to be the main question regarding my call, but
I honestly don't remember.
Len, I thought he went on the PUP list.
I don't believe he was put on the PUP list. He might have been. He might have been one of those injury settlements release type of guys. Honestly,
okay.
I don't remember. I will have to look to see what the Giants did with Trey Propog. I don't remember.
Okay, I thought he was on some sort of list, which seems strange to me as well.
Right.
Okay. Hey, John. I know what your allegiances are, so I have to make this comment. How about this last 60 hours for some of your favorite sports teams in New York?
Dude.
Oh, my
dude.
God.
It's, I can't.
Well, Len, way to start this conversation. I'm going to drink to that.
Unbelievable. Well, hey, it's going to get better. I want to lay one on Lance here, and if I might, and I appreciate you guys saying we got to look internally first. You know, there's a reason why we got Newhouse, we got John Jerry. I'm not a big fan, as you know, but I think we need to look internally first. That's the right way to do it. And Lance, you remember one of my quotes that I've been laying on you for about 3 years now. We're not going to beat Dallas. We're not going to beat Philly. We're not going to beat the Patriots and any of the better teams in the NFL with ex-players from Dallas. We got to develop something in that locker room. And so I think we look internally first.
You know, Len, it's funny. Do you know what actually – and it's never going to happen because they're in the same division. And I will preface my comment by saying this. The Cowboys right now have an embarrassment of riches on their offensive line. If they decide – that Lael Collins could be a starting right tackle for them this year, it would actually make a lot of sense for the Giants and Cowboys to get together, have the Cowboys trade Doug Free, who's a good starting caliber right tackle to the Giants, and you can maybe even slide him over to left if you want, and the Giants could send Dallas maybe one of their three running backs or something like that. And I realize that's never going to happen, but just in terms of needs for the two teams, it's something that does make a certain amount of sense.
Okay. Let me try one other idea here out on you guys, and I appreciate your comments on that. I'm not a big Doug Free fan, but I understand where you're going with it. I still don't think we beat those teams. This is all about Jerry and the scouts and the pro personnel people, you know. But it's, you know, Jerry and the scouts mainly getting some young people in here, and let's not, you know, continue with any castoffs. Who's the senior guy in that offensive line locker room right now?
In terms of tenure on the Giants itself, it's
tenure.
Justin Pugh.
Come on, Justin. Take charge in there. Will Beattie's not coming back. That's the mindset. Will's not coming back, guys.
It has to be the mindset. I'm not sure if it's true, but you have to approach it that way.
With Pat Flaherty as well. Let's get this done, guys. I'd like the way Parcells treated injuries like this in the past. You know, first thing was, find a designation for these guys and don't let people sit in that offensive line room and start saying things like, oh, just wait until Will gets back. Everything is going to be okay. What we want to do right now, Will's not coming back.
Well, look, Len, I can tell you this absolutely. Tom Coughlin's going to approach it that way. Hence, Pat Flaherty's going to approach it that way. They're going to try to instill that attitude into the players.
Good.
And it's the players' responsibility then to accept that attitude and reflect that attitude. So I guarantee
absolutely.
You that's how the coach is going to look at it. They're going to say, guys, look, the guys in this room, the guys in the field are the guys that have to perform. No one's making excuses. We're not waiting for any saviors to walk through the door. You guys got to get it done.
But that has to be the mindset, Len, of every NFL player.
Okay.
I mean, to generalize here, every backup needs to prepare like they're going to be a starter because, as you know, an injury could happen in week 5 and you may be the next guy on the depth chart. If you're not ready to go, then what's the point of having you on the roster? So I think every player has to have that mindset.
here's what I want to see happen. One of two things with Justin Pugh. I want Justin Pugh to go to Pat Flaherty today and say to Pat, Pat, use me where you need me going forward. Or I want Pat to pull him in one-on-one and look at him and say, Justin, you're the lead guy in that locker room. Get this done. Pull these guys together. Hey, I have one other question. I don't want to fire the strength and conditioning coach, but can I ask one question?
What do you got, Lynn?
What's the goal of lifting in the off season?
To get stronger.
I'm a little frustrated. I'm not firing coaches, but what's the goal? What's he trying to accomplish lifting in the off season? The guy's 30 years old. Is he looking to get stronger?
Why not?
He can't be looking to get any bigger. There's no good weight added after age 30.
Oh, no, Len.
I think you're generalizing.
No, Len, here's the thing. Guys, when they leave her in the off season, they'll go through a month or two of recovery. And during that month or two of recovery, you are going to lose muscle mass. The reason you have the off-season conditioning program is to put that muscle mass back on that might have went away during that rest period right after the season ended. So you definitely do add good weight in terms of muscle during the off-season conditioning program. That's the point of it.
And it's also to maintain strength as well.
Whatever Beattie's been playing at for the last two or three – I'm not blaming him for this. Understand, these things happen. But whatever Will has been playing at for the last 2 or 3 years – That's what he should be playing at. Now, if you want to talk to me about a maintenance program, that's fine. If he's trying to put on weight at age 30, there's no good weight added after age 30. I mean, that's true for you and I, and it's true for a professional athlete. You should be losing weight. Look at Michael Strahan. He lost weight to play better. Yeah, just a little frustration on my part. I hope Will recovers. I hope he gets to play again this year.
All right, Len.
Good player. I do appreciate his contribution. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Len. Appreciate your phone call.
Let's go, Giants.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye. I really don't think you could take to heart how this injury came about. In the NFL, freak injuries happen. I mean, for the fan base to say I would have felt better if Beattie got hurt in week two with a football-related injury as opposed to lifting weights. I mean, that to me is minutia. It really is. Plus,
right,
I said,
it happened now.
Yeah, I said with respect to timing, it's better that now you have the time to work out the offensive line kinks as opposed to, you know, when you're smack in the middle of the season. But you can't get caught up in how the injury happened. Walter Thurman suffered the same injury last season. Robert Ayers suffered the same injury last season. Yes, it happened when they were on the football field, but it happens, torn pectoral muscles, and unfortunately, you do lose an integral part of your offensive line, but that's why you have 53 players on the roster, and this is the time where you build the depth up and you build continuity, and I think that the Giants are going to have ample time to work those things out as opposed to, you know, dealing with something like this when perhaps the season is on the line and you don't have the practice time and the flexibility to get everybody on the straight and narrow.
201-939-4513. Stick on the phones. Dre is in Atlanta. He's up next. Dre?
Hey, what's going on, John? Hey,
how are you, Dre? What's going on?
How we doing, Dre?
We're doing great. Let me just add a little bit of knowledge to it. Really, you do not gain muscle maturity till you hit 30. It's after you hit 32, 33 is when you start on that downward spiral. When you know, the closer you get to 40, then you start the muscle deterioration process.
Hey, look, Dre, here's the bottom line. The reason they have a strength and conditioning program is so guys get stronger. There's a reason guys are in here lifting weights for a month.
I'm not complaining. I'm just adding a little knowledge to
I got
he's clarifying what Len was saying.
You understand. Yeah. I'm just clarifying.
Oh, no, Dre, I wasn't trying to argue with you. I was just trying to clarify and refute what Len was saying, that the reason guys get here and lift weights for a month before they get on the field is because they want the guys to get stronger. And even a guy that's 28 or 29, you can get stronger if you lift weights. I mean, I have coworkers that are 34, 35. They're in there lift weights. They've gotten much stronger doing that. So the thought that you can't get stronger in your mid-30s is not correct.
I'm 42, and I get stronger every day.
Exactly.
You know, stamina-wise and everything without supplements. So, you know, good diet, good regimen, is bound to happen. I mean,
I'm happy to hear that because we may implement a new policy where we start testing the phone callers. So as long as you're doing it the right way, I'm very happy to hear that.
No problem.
I just wanted to make sure.
Call this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All natural.
Okay. But, that's what we want to hear. Anyway, continue.
Right. Reason why I call it. This is where, you know, Reese's offseason pickup and his decisions come to test. We went ahead. We got a lot of bodies in for the offensive line to compete. You got Marshall Newhouse. You got Hart. You know, you got and you got Flowers. And you got other. You know, Mosley. You got everybody there. You know, this is not the time to panic because we got a lot of time. This is the time where Justin Pugh or some of the other linemen get together and start doing workouts together. When they get out there on the field and they start working on their continuity now. You know, you may not be able to run plays because, you know, the playbook is going to be more advanced. But that's when you sit down and you get the knowledge and you get in that room on your own and you start talking and start building that camaraderie. Just like Eli did with the receivers and some of the running backs, just like Rashard Jennings did with Andre Williams and Darkwa. It's time for the offensive line to start doing the same thing, getting together and understanding that, you know, it's all about us. This is us in the room. Because personally, on a good note, if we don't see Beattie this year, it's because the offensive line has gelled and is working together. And that's the only way I don't see him coming back on the field. Because they'll plug him in after they've, you know, if they have been successful, to plug him in after game seven, I don't know. That might tear up some of the continuity that they've already, you know, built. So, you know, who knows? Maybe you have to put, you know, Flowers at left tackle. And if he could handle JPP, you know, give the kid a chance. You know, I'm not saying he's going to be successful all the time, but, hey, he's a professional now. It's time to earn that check.
And the opportunity is there, and you're right. He's going to have guys that are going to test him during practice in terms of JPP, Robert Ayers, and so forth, as they mix and match guys on a variety of different sides during practice. So that is obviously a benefit for Flowers. With respect to Beattie and whether or not he's going to return, I mean, that is something that the Giants can worry about down the road. Remember, Schwartz got hurt last season. He did come back. Unfortunately, he got hurt again, and then he was sidelined for the rest of the season. So I wouldn't necessarily say he's out of the equation, but you're right. If continuity is built over the first X amount of games, you know, at least need to think about whether or not you want to disrupt that flow. But we're a long way till we get till week 8, week 9 in the season. Right now, I think the primary focus is let's gain continuity during OTAs and training camp.
Thanks, Dre.
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Dre.
201-939-4513. Jerry in Ohio is up next. Jerry?
Hi.
Hi, Jerry.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Thank you, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I agree with you about three candidates for the first half of the year at left tackle. I would try Pugh, Flowers, and Newhouse and let the best left tackle candidate win and first get stability there. I also know that Schwartz has played a little right tackle.
That's correct.
And I wonder why no one is, because he's so big, you know, he's a mauler. I don't see why he couldn't play right tackle, at least as much as somebody else in the first part of preseason to test him there.
Well, Jerry, I think the reason people haven't brought up Schwartz at right tackle is because of last year, they had the choice. They could have either played Schwartz at tackle or Pugh at tackle. They chose to play Pugh at tackle because they thought Schwartz was better at guard. So I would assume that thinking is the same. So if they have a choice between Pugh or Schwartz at tackle, they're going to pick Pugh. You know what I'm saying?
I understand, but I also know that Schwartz is about 40 or 50 pounds heavier than Pugh, and that has been a big issue, that a 300-pound man is not the same as a athletic 340 or 345 like Schwartz could be if he's healthy. The running game went down for a lot of reasons. The worst reason was Jerry, but Pugh admitted that he didn't have the year, the second year, like he had as his rookie year. And I think we could all agree that right tackle is not his best position. And you know, maybe it's guard, and maybe it's left tackle right now because of the issues. But I still would like to get a big guy there. The idea originally was Flowers. So if you move Flowers there, is Pugh going to be better at left tackle when he's only 300 pounds?
Well, these are the types of things that they're going to have to evaluate. during OTAs and training camp. I think what you just mentioned is they have some options, but they haven't solidified anything. Remember, there's another player they drafted in Bobby Hart who does fit your criteria. He's 329.
I like him.
They brought him in. He has experience at guard. He has experience at tackle. Don't overlook his name. Eric Herman is on the roster as a guard, too. Don't overlook his name. Brandon Mosley.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a number of options. We're focusing on the household names. But, you know, Jerry, as you alluded to, I think there's other guys on the depth chart who have been here before who now even have an opportunity to perhaps prove that they could be a starting caliber offensive tackle or a guard.
They have another guy named Geddes, G-E-D-D-I-S.
Adam Geddes, yeah.
Who is he?
He's listed as a guard on the roster. I have the roster here in front of me. He's 6'2", 305 out of Iowa. He's been in the system. He's mainly projected as a guard. I wouldn't necessarily assume that they would think about maybe moving him out of tackle. He would be a guard option when you look at their options.
My last thought is I'd like really to wish Jerry Reese would consider, and I know that you said it, that they consider everything, of players that are free agents. They have a guy out from, I think, Tennessee, Justin Blaylock. He started.
The guard from Atlanta.
Atlanta. Realized Atlanta's line was awful also, so that's probably why he's not on the team. Is there a guard that you could foresee Reese bringing in? You know, they have a couple of $1 million still in the cap to bring in, so that could have some stability at one point while they make all these changes everywhere else.
Well, Jerry, first of all, I'll go back to my preface about internal options number one. One guy I'll throw out just because he's familiar to the organization, and once again, this is speculation. There is nothing official. John and I have no idea who the executive branch is talking to, but Kevin Booth is a free agent. He would fit what you're talking about as a former guard in this system who's very versatile.
How old is he?
Boothie's 31.
The guy was superb. We talk about the big five, but when the Giants were the best running team, often Booth came in, at least as the sixth lineman, or if somebody got injured short term, Booth would be a superb. You know, and he's very intelligent. He got a master's through going through the Giants NFL program in accounting.
Interesting way to say it, yeah.
CPA. He's quite a guy, and yeah, earlier Len mentioned, you know, that Pugh should step up and tell all the guys, come on, and let's put it together. How could people respect Pugh, who publicly knows and admitted that his second year was not as good as his first year? He's a young guy. You know, I could see Schwartz doing that if he could have a specific position, but not if there's confusion. But Kevin Booth can play center. He can play guard. He's even played, you know, from time to time for a half a game tackle, and he certainly plays extra blocking tight end. Kevin Booth was a mistake letting him go.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right, Jerry.
Thank you so much. Enjoy your show.
You
too.
One other guy I want to bring up, too, I don't know if you mentioned him in your litany of names, Michael Bumiero.
No, I did not.
He's the guy the Giants brought up in the offseason. No reason I bring him up. 6'8", 340.
Yeah.
24-year-old kid out of Brooklyn. So
Stony Brook.
Yes, he went to Stony Brook. I'm secretly rooting for him to make the team.
Well, no surprise.
He's a Brooklyn guy. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, I got no issue. I mean, at this point, you'd like everybody to get a chance.
I just want to have
players who haven't necessarily been in the starting lineup.
My only goal this offseason is to have you do a stand-up interview standing next to 6'8 Michael Bumiero.
Yes, that would be some challenge for the photog.
Yes, and also you're doing some like arm lift to try to hold the mic up to his mouth.
If we're going
to
set this up in fairness, let's make it somewhat of a level playing field, and let's put him in a chair. How about that?
Or we could put
is that too much high maintenance?
Or we could put you in a high chair.
I knew you were going to throw that out. See, that was me giving you a fastball, and you hit it out of the park, which means that I need to watch what I say on this program.
That was even a fastball. That was like
that was a fast one. I brought up chairs. You had high chair. Surprised you didn't bring up a bib and a bottle too. We could throw in the mix as well. Why stop there?
Oh, there are so many things I could say.
Oh, you
can.
Hey, I haven't gone to the Knicks draft circles
yet. We'll do that at the end.
Keep that in mind.
Jason in Texas. Jason, how are you?
Jason, are you there? Jason going once? Jason.
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing?
Hey, Jason, how are you, pal? What's happening?
Hey, doing good. Hey, look, I'm going to make this real quick. Well, what is Newhouse's primary position? Is he guard or is he a tackle?
No, Newhouse has started at both left tackle and right tackle in the NFL, so he was a tackle by trade.
Briefly at right guard during his career, but mostly used as tackle.
All right. So I think that the Giants just need to keep their plan, whatever they were having to go this year, keep the people in the same positions and basically try Newhouse out at that. And I think we'll be fine.
Hey, you know what? And Jason, that's why he's here. You're bringing a guy like Marshall Newhouse to be your swing tackle, to step in there and do the job when a guy like BD goes down. He'll have the opportunity to do it. And I'm not going to come out now and say I know he's not going to be able to do it. I know I've got a lot of tweets of fans complaining about that. I want to see him on the field. Let's see him do it. That's why he's here.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really all that I wanted to say. Appreciate it. You guys have a good day.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the call.
All right, Frank in Tampa is next. Frank, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys. Good morning. I have a question. As far as undrafted free agents concerned, when I was watching that, what happened with Ed Collins, what would prevent a player, you know, even one that was, you know, expected to get drafted in the second, third round or whatever, just saying, you know, his agent saying, look, don't draft him because he's not going to sign with anybody. And then is there any limit on how much money those guys can sign for? Can he just get all the teams bidding for him and actually get his worth up?
To answer your question,
Frank. By not getting drafted?
Didn't mean to cut you off. To answer your question, there is a limit.
There's
a pool. And that's why there was only so many teams that could go after him. Also, there's limit in terms of how much of a signing bonus you could give a player like that. That was a differential in the negotiating period as
well. The Cowboys basically gave Collins as much as they could, and they guaranteed as much of the money as they could by rule. So the Cowboys maxed that out. But there is a undrafted free agency pool that teams cannot spend more than X dollars on their undrafted free agent. So there is a limit on the amount of money you can spend.
So if could a guy potentially get paid more money as an undrafted free agent than a seventh-round pick?
Yes, I believe that's true.
Good. How far up do you think it goes? You know, second, third, fourth, what round?
I believe based on the numbers, I was reading an article about this when Collins signed. If Collins plays all 3 years, and then when he becomes a free agent in year number four, because as an undrafted guy, you can only sign a three-year deal. That's the maximum deal you can sign. If he gets a first-round tender from the Cowboys in year number four, which means another team, if they sign him, have to give the Cowboys a first-round pick, which probably is not going to happen, obviously. He has the potential to make more money than, I believe, guys picked in the mid to late second round.
Wow.
But again, that's only if he gets that first round tender in the fourth year.
Gotcha. Uh-huh. You know, I know with the strength and conditioning, people have discussed it and everything. I just hope to the good Lord that, you know, that Beatty was lifting within the constraints of the program, you know, and was being monitored and didn't try to do a max rep or something, you know, and just, I don't know if we'll ever know, but I certainly hope so, because that shouldn't be going on at this, you know, at this level.
Well, Frank, the only thing I can tell you is that the strength and conditioning coaches are in there with all the players when they lift. There's a very strict program; they monitor it. I can't tell you. I have absolutely no clue what the specific circumstances were around it. I honestly have no clue.
Yeah, no, I'm certain, and I'm sure we'll never know. But you know what I'm most concerned about, guys, is, you know, the tackle position, of course, we got to be worried, but what it does all the way down the line, because if we are left with Jerry having to run block at either guard spot, I mean, Charlie, look at the board up there. He's going to have to rework his picks down the line, because we can't win with him run blocking. We're going to be back where we were last year and the year before. I know some of the services, they couldn't even rate him. He was so low in run blocking. You know, I would watch it, and I just almost vomit. And I thought, am I seeing what I'm seeing? I'm no expert, but from what I've seen and the evaluations and everything, I mean, he's useless. A man that big, it's just indescribable how he cannot run block. But if he can't run block, it's like dominoes. Our whole season is gonna go down. It's gonna change everything. It's gonna change what Williams can do. It's gonna change what Vereen can do. It's just gonna go right down the line.
Well, Frank, keep in mind, once again, you know, nobody is on the starting lineup for the offensive line at this point. No depth chart has been formed. So you're going based on your observations from last season. We have no idea who they're thinking about putting in at the respective guard spot. So while you're talking about Jerry, John and I just listened. There's a number of other guards on the roster. They may get opportunities to prove that they belong in the starting
lineup. Or, quite frankly, no pun intended, where I mean they could end up putting Newhouse and Flowers at tackle, and then they have Pugh and theoretically Schwartz at guard. So I don't think panicking about anything at this point is worth it until next week. We'll see for the first time who the five offensive linemen are going to be lined up in OTAs. And quite frankly, at that point, I'm not even sure if Josh Schwartz is going to be ready yet. Remember, he's still rehabbing. So if he's not on the field, we might really have no clue as to what this offensive line is going to look like in the summer. Right, bud?
Yeah, and serious problems, and I hope it doesn't happen. But thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Frank. Appreciate it. I told Johnny to screen one more caller. If I would have known it was this guy, I don't know if I would have told him to do it. Because he was all over Twitter yesterday after the news broke. He was tweeting me left and right.
Oh, boy.
He was panicking. He was angry.
He was doing everything
Charlie usually does. Hopefully he went into the forest. He went into the woods. He meditated a little bit. He became one with nature. I'm sure the weather right now is beautiful up there in Maine. And hopefully he's calmed down a little bit from yesterday to today. Chuckles, good afternoon.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you, sir?
What a wonderful day in the neighborhood, isn't it? Just perfect.
The sarcasm just oozing out of you.
The weather down here is great, Charlie. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's getting better up here. No, it is. But let me say one thing. There is a tackle in Denver, Chris Clark, that looks like the Broncos are going to get rid of because they got a bunch of rookies in, and his salary cap hit was kind of high, and he was a starting right tackle for them. So there's a possibility, if Jerry is awake, to maybe pick up this guy because this guy is a very good tackle. So hopefully we're not just going to sit back and just be happy with the players we have on the offensive line, because if we do, we're in deep trouble because we have no depth. We got young guys, we got rookies, we got guys coming back from injury. And if you think Beattie's the only offensive lineman going down this year, you're dreaming. You guys are living in Never Never Land with Michael Jackson. We're going to have a couple more go down.
Charlie, so I can't sit here and assume guys. That guys are going to start dropping like flies. I mean, come on, what do you want me to do?
Well, I'm just saying we need the depth, and Jerry Reese should be scouring and looking, and he should be going out and getting, you know, looking at these guys like Chris Clark.
He should be trying to
talk to Denver right now. It's poor Eli. If I was Eli, I would say this is my last year. I'm getting the hell out of Dodge because with this offensive line, he's going to get killed. Newhouse is. You know what his ratings were from Pro Football Weekly or whatever that company is that rates everybody? He was the worst friggin' rated tackle ever, ever. We might as well bring back Charlie Brown. Let's bring back Charlie Brown. Let's bring back Kevin Booth. Let's bring back who else? I'm telling you, Jerry Reese has set this up. He could have got Barkdale. He would. Minimum salary. He got minimum salary, right tackle from the Rams, just for a backup, just to have some vets in there. But no, Jerry Reese, no, we're fine. Right. Everything's good.
Charlie, I got it. So, Charlie, I got it. I got it. I got it.
And John, this was your worst nightmare. What did you say? Who was the one player that you said on the offense that
somebody
was
finally brought
lose?
That up. I was waiting for somebody to bring that up today. why am I not surprised? Why did I take this call? I am picking myself right now.
See, John? Why was that? Because you're very smart, John, because you knew Petey was our best offensive lineman, and we have no depth to back this guy
up. You know what's funny, Charlie? And I find this amusing. All Lance and I took were calls for a month. In January and February, everybody wanted the Giants to cut Will Beattie. Now Will Beattie gets hurt, now Will Beattie gets hurt and the sky's freaking falling. Which one is it? Did you want to cut him and he's no good, or is he the most pivotal player in the team and now he's injured and the whole team's screwed up? Which one is it? You can't have it both ways.
I'm not trying to have it both ways.
The other thing I don't understand about your point is, you list Giants veteran offensive lineman who potentially could return. And then at the same time, you talk about going out and getting other veteran offensive linemen who may have not had any connection to the Giants. What's the difference? If you're looking for a veteran offensive lineman, whether they have the tie to the organization or not, they're still a veteran offensive lineman.
And Charlie, I want to add this too real quick.
That's what I want.
Yeah, go
a
ahead.
Veteran offensive lineman, that's all.
But this guy,
Chris Clark, would be perfect.
Well, right now, though, he's a member of the Broncos, though. So,
yeah,
you know,
but he won't be very long.
Well, but that's you and your inside sources.
That's right. I have a lot of sources.
Apparently you do. Yes. Well, at least you admitted publicly that you're in your head.
Thank you, Charlie.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Charlie. And let me just say this, too. And you talked about Jerry Reese. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. If you guys don't think he's sitting up there with Kenny Sternfeld and everybody else in pro personnel and Mark Ross, and they're pouring over every single available player on the free agent market to help them out at every position, not just offensive tackle, every position on this roster, they are. And if there's someone better out there that's a free agent that's better than somebody currently on this 90-man roster, guess what? They're going to bring that better player in, and they're going to get rid of somebody that's not as good on the roster. That's how this works. It's a talent acquisition business. You get the best group of players in the building that you can. You bring them in. Let the best man win. You get down to your 53. The Giants and Jerry Reese and Mark Ross and the pro personnel department, they're not sitting up there twiddling their thumbs with their feet up saying the draft is over, big free agents are off the board, our work is done. That's not how it works. They're sitting there. They have reports on every single player in the league. They know who's good and who's not. And when guys become available, they look at them and say, can this guy potentially help our football team? Maybe not as a starter, maybe as depth. Maybe it's just as a body to provide competition in training camp. For any possible reason, Lance, they're out there, they're looking, and if somebody's good to help the team, they're going to go out there, they're going to get them.
The evaluation process never ends in the NFL, John. I think that's the best way to sum things up. They evaluate the crop of free agents, it turns over to the rookie class, and then it turns over to players that get cut at the last second. You can never stop evaluating, including your own current roster, let's not forget about
it as
well.
And they're not adverse to doing things like this. They brought in Shane Locklear a few years ago because they thought he could help, and guess what? He was a pivotal player on this team.
Who is the long-lost brother of Sean Locklear, we should mention.
What did I say?
I think you said Shane Locklear.
Did I say
Shane? I don't
know,
maybe I'm hearing
that. No, I might have said Shane.
He's the long-lost brother of Sean, though. Just for clarification. But continue.
I'm trying to think. Was there a Shane? Maybe I was thinking Shane Legler, the kicker, and that's why I got the two confused.
Possible.
Sean Locklear.
You don't have to make an excuse. Don't worry.
You get
it's all right.
Point.
We know the slip of the tongue happens here.
But anyway, the point being is that if there's a guy out there that's going to help, they will go out there and they will bring them in. That's my point. That's all I'm saying.
And I still go back to the fact that, you know, Charlie, using his phone call as an example, don't ask me why I am, but maybe I need to be examined.
Well,
he's concerned about depth, he threw out. We listed off a laundry list of offensive linemen who have yet to get on the field for OTAs and training camp. So, you know, you can think about what you've seen out of them in limited time on the field in preseason. That's one thing. But this is when the true evaluation process begins with a new offense, not second year of a new offensive system, because it is still relatively new, and some new coaching staff members. So, you know, it's really all over again in terms of how they view where these offensive linemen are going to fit into their system.
All right. Give it to me in the draft lottery. What do you got?
No, I was disappointed because I wanted to bring up the connections to the Giants, how meaningful the number 4 is to the New York Giants, just to drive you nuts. The importance of number 4. Giants have won 4 Super Bowl titles. Do you aware of that? I was also noticing,
I am aware of that,
I just
yes.
wanted to
I'm
make
aware
sure
of how
that.
Many Super Bowl titles the Giants have. Yes, I know.
The other thing that I was
Thank
looking
you.
At, and, you know, I was stretching it here. Nobody on this current roster wears number 4. Did you realize that? I think we should address that in some capacity. Nobody on the current Giants roster is wearing number 4.
Now, no, I would have to look at it again. I don't remember offhand.
Nobody
but
has
is
number 4.
Is 4 one of the retired numbers?
That's a good point. I didn't necessarily look
I
into that.
I don't think it is, but
I didn't look into
look,
that.
Let me look that up
but
right now.
But that's another connection there. So, in terms of, in seriousness, my feelings, remember, on this show, we talked about it the day of the lottery. I said the Knicks will probably get the 3rd or the 4th overall pick. And you
agree
with me
with
on
you.
That.
Doesn't mean so I'm going to be happy
why,
about
well, but
it.
But I don't understand why you're
4
so stunned.
4 was Tuffy Lehman's retired.
Okay, so that would explain why no one has number 4. All right, we at least solved that mystery. But
so do you want
to
make a connection between
the
Knicks' 4th pick in the draft and Tuffy Lehman's?
No, I was just going to try to drive you nuts with the relevance of the number 4. I think I've made my point.
Hey, look, what did I say to you? I'd be thrilled with one. I'd be almost thrilled with two. I'd be happy with three. I'd live with four, and I'd be apoplectic
so
with
five. So you'd live with four.
I'm alive.
Okay. Well, that's
I'm happy.
Good to hear. I'm glad.
I'm living. I'm breathing.
Nobody's
I'm here.
You, you know, do jumping jacks, but that's the nature of the lottery. You're going to have years where the lottery balls don't align.
Well, and the problem you have with the Knicks, and this is why it's so frustrating, they only have one shot at this because they trade the pick last year. They trade their pick next year. So you only get one shot. That's the problem. It was so important because the Knicks had traded all their other picks, so they had to hit this year because they're not going to have another chance. That's why it's
well, a number
the level
of
frustration.
Picks were also traded by some of the members of the old regime, too.
Oh, of course.
I mean, that I didn't necessarily have anything to do with Phil.
No.
Yeah.
And remember,
kind
of a member of the old regime.
You and I have had conversations through your preliminary evaluations. You tell me that you think there's about four players deep.
It is. It is. But
which I don't necessarily agree with, but that's a whole other story.
Well, I think I know a lot more about the top three guys. So I think I like the two bigs, as you know. D'Angelo Russell, I think, is the third best player. I'm a big fan of his. That's why I would have been happy with Reeves. I would have been confident I would have gone either Russell or Okafor.
As
I been
the Sixers supposedly are interested in.
Look, the things I read about Emmanuel Mudiay are great, but he played in China and played, what, seven games out there before he hurt his ankle?
Yeah.
I haven't seen this kid play enough to have a real opinion on him. All I can do is read scouting reports. At that point, I'm going on faith. And I think a lot of NBA teams are going to wait for the workouts. They talk about combines and workouts in the NFL being important. Those workouts and combine for him is going to be maybe the most important thing that happens in the next 3 or 4 weeks to determine how good you think he's going to be. Justice Winslow, people like him, I see him more as a very good support player down the road. Like, he could be a Jimmy Butler, who's not a 1A scorer, but he's probably maybe the second or third best player on your team, and that's a good thing. He could be his maximum limit is he could be a Kawhi Leonard type. Where you can be a very good defender.
Take that, though, in a heartbeat.
Well, I agree. But I think those guys I don't think are ever going to go down as, like, potential, you know, top 10 player, top 15, top 20 player of all time type of guys. That's all I'm saying. I think the top two guys in this draft could be in that category if everything goes right.
Well, I think Winslow has a lot of upside because I see him as a two-way player.
No, he is.
He plays defense and he gives you offense.
I agree. And I think he's a solid guy, but I don't think he is going to be the guy that carries your franchise.
That's fair. But you know what? I don't even know outside of Okafor or Towns, at least in the immediate future. I don't even know if Russell's going to come in and he's going to put a team on his shoulder.
And I don't think Towns will put a team on his shoulder right away. That's going to
take some time.
I agree. I don't think that's wrong. And look, heck, for all we know, we look at this draft 3 or 4 years from now, Mudiay or Winslow could be the best player in the draft. The NBA draft's a damn crapshoot.
Well,
nobody has any idea.
15th
it's the same
overall.
Thing with the NFL draft. You don't know. The guy that's picked fourth, look at Beckham last year. Where was he picked? He was picked out of the house, outside the top 10. He ended up being the best player in the draft. So you never really know. It's just, it's frustrating when you have a 17-win year, you go through so many months of suffering, and you don't even get the choice. You get the guy that's left, which is why it's so annoying.
But at the other side of things, it gives you just more substance in terms of your frustration, and you get to write it to all the Knick fans out there and add more content out there. There's a positive spin to everything.
I warned my wife. I told her. I said, Katie, do not be in the house on Tuesday night because it's the Knicks, so you know it's not going to go well. So you're going to see me lose my mind. And I told you, you don't want to be there for this. You're not going to enjoy it.
That's why I saw you before the lottery.
Yes.
See, I was smart.
She got home. She decided to hang out.
Uh-oh.
And you know what? She saw me lose my mind.
Were there items thrown?
I did not throw anything, but there was a lot of stomping back and forth. Pumping the fist and a lot of swearing.
Too bad.
There were a lot of words that I could not use on this program
right now.
No PG-13
content. Okay.
You can ask Pete. He was there.
Oh, I will probably be
asking
Pete.
My brother. He was there. I was not pleased.
Now, speaking of the household, before we close up shop.
Oh, yeah.
There's a new addition to the household.
Well, not yet.
Well, you did make it publicly known on Twitter yesterday.
I will be picking up the new member of the Schmelk household on Saturday, a little French bulldog puppy.
Okay.
So that's a big step, adding the first member to the new Schmelk family. And we'll see how much that little dog drives me nuts and before I want to get back.
I hope you're going to enjoy those morning walks.
And I will be the one in charge of the morning
walks,
too.
I'm sure you will,
too.
Absolutely. Speaking of big, was there a measurement on the ears yet? Did we get
specific
measurements?
He's got some big ears.
Oh, boy. As I wrote on Twitter.
French bulldog puppies have very, very large ears. If you guys want to go to my Twitter feed, I posted a picture of the puppy yesterday. He's a French bulldog. So I came up with the name.
This is another big
Now, the name,
here.
The breeder, and boy, we're going to hopefully cut the end of the show off when we post the archive up on Giants.com.
Wow.
But now, the breeder who, you know, raises the puppies in their home, they give names to all the puppies when they're very young to differentiate them. Now, they named the puppy Kobe. So that's not happening.
Yes, I don't
Kobe
think
Bryant will not
direction.
Be running around the Schmell Castle. No, he will not. So.
You're going to give him a nickname. I know you are.
No.
Not a nickname. I mean like a Knicks
changing
name.
Changing his name.
Yeah, but
no.
Ewing,
see,
Oakley.
You know me.
Yeah.
I'm a historical guy. I'm a big guy. I'm into history. I was a history minor in college. So what we decided to do is that it's a French bulldog, right?
Ulysses
so
S. Grant. Is that what
so
you're naming him?
I went with like the toughest French guy I could think of.
Oh, the French connection.
So, yeah, he's a French bulldog. So okay. That's what I did. And, you know, we didn't want to go with, like, a warlord or something like that. So Napoleon, it was kind of long. We
that
pushed that
been
aside.
My first guess. Okay,
and,
too bad. That would have been good.
Well, it's perfect for your dog because you also have a Napoleon complex. So it would have been perfect
yes,
for you to name your dog. That would have made perfect. That would make perfect sense.
Yes.
Like, De Gaulle, I couldn't get excited about that. I wasn't going to go with that. You know me. I'm not picking, like, a philosopher or an artist or something like that.
Louis?
So, no, I'm not going with, like, Louis XIV.
No, Louis?
Either.
Okay.
No.
All right.
He got guillotined. I'm
well,
not going there.
I mean, boy.
I think he did,
as if
right?
somebody's going to come over to your house and you can give him a whole French history lesson over the name of the dog. My goodness.
So what we decide to go with is that we're going with Cousteau.
Okay.
For Jacques Cousteau.
Interesting.
The diver.
Yes.
And the explorer. Now, the irony of naming a French bulldog Cousteau is that if you didn't know this, bulldogs can't swim. French or English, they sink like stones. Like you put them in water, they just all the way to the bottom.
With those
it
ears,
it doesn't go well.
Yeah, but with those ears,
you flap
that thing should be floating or flapping somehow. Take a look at the photo. I'm telling you,
yeah, he's got
that
the
picks
ears.
Up Direct TV.
He's
no
cute,
doubt about
he's
that.
Very cute.
Oh, he's a cute. Yes, I'm sure.
So
much
well,
cuter than the owner, I'd say. That's all other subject.
And let's close on that.
Yes.
Reminder, folks, no show tomorrow, no show on Monday. Lance and Anita next Tuesday. Then we'll show the rest of the week. OTA start on Wednesday on Giants.com. We will have full coverage. Myself, Lance, Paul, Neitz will be here. We'll do it. We'll get it done. Thanks for joining us. Have a fantastic Memorial Day weekend, everybody. I know I will. I know Lance will. And we'll see you next week on Giants.com. Enjoy it.